Now we're up to Loose Wig 8. I can't wait for number 8. Loose Wig 8, side 1.
You say you're leaving, won't be back no more. Further down the road, baby, you'll reap just what you sow. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop my show. I help you, baby, you couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet. You're helping somebody else, but that's all right. I want you to know, one monkey don't stop old Sonny Show. Tuck you in, baby, you couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet, you're helping somebody else, I got to tell you. But that's all right, I want you to know, one monkey don't stop my show. When I had money, had a plenty friend. Now I ain't got a dime, like a road dotter in. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop old Sonny Show. You say you're leaving, this is your last go round. But I'll find me somebody, baby, before the sun go down. But that's all right, I want you to know, one monkey don't stop old Sonny Show.
Woo! And then marry her later and say, well, what difference does it make? She's all right, you know. She had to earn a living. We had to have the money, do you see? But it's all right. Let's forget about it. Well, I feel it's much the same way when you start out to be an artist. If first you do all the wrong things because you need to live, you have no excuse, really. You have always the privilege to starve, do you see? that sounds as funny, I suppose. But I mean, people say, well, if you don't do this or that, you'll die. Well, why can't you die, do you see? What's so terrible about it? Take a chance. Go near to the edge, do you see?
I came home and found a lion in my living room, rushed out on the fire escape, screaming, "Lion! Lion!" Two stenographers pulled their brunette hair and banged the window shut. I hurried home to Patterson and stayed 2 days. Called up my old Reichian analyst who'd kicked me out of therapy for smoking marijuana. "It's happened," I panted. "There's a lion in my room." I'm afraid any discussion would have no value. He hung up. I went to my old boyfriend. We got drunk with his girlfriend. I kissed him and announced I had a lion with a mad gleam in my eye. We wound up fighting on the floor. I bit his eyebrow and he kicked me out. I ended masturbating in his Jeep, parked in the street, moaning, "Lion." Found Joey, my novelist friend, and roared at him, Lion! He looked at me, interested, and read me his spontaneous, Ignu high poetry. I listened for lions. All I heard was elephant, tiger, hippogriff, unicorn, ants. But I figured he really understood me when we made it in Ignatz Wisdom's bathroom. But next day he sent me a leaf from his smoky mountain retreat. I love you, little Bobo, with your delicate golden lions. But there being no self and no bars, therefore the zoo of your dear father hath no lion. You said your mother was mad. Don't expect me to produce the monster for your bridegroom. Confused, dazed, and exalted, bethought me of real lions starved in his think in Harlem. Opened the door, the room was filled with the bomb blast of his anger. He roaring hungrily at the plaster walls, but nobody could hear him outside through the window. My eye caught the edge of the red neighbor apartment building standing in deafening stillness. We gazed at each other, his implacable yellow eye in the red halo of fur waxed ruby on my own, but he stopped roaring and bared a fang, greeting. I turned my back and cooked broccoli for supper on an iron gas stove, boiled water, and took a hot bath in the old tub under the sink board. He didn't eat me, though I regretted him starving in my presence. Next week, he wasted away, a sick rug full of bones, weakened hair falling out, enraged and reddening eye as he lay, aching, huge, hairy head on his paws, by the egg-crate bookcase filled up with thin volumes of Plato and Buddha. Sat by his side every night, averting my eyes from his hungry, moth-eaten face. Stopped eating myself. He got weaker and roared at night while I had nightmares. Eaten by lion in bookstore on cosmic campus. A lion myself, starved by Professor Kandinsky. Dying in a lion's flophouse circus. I woke up mornings, the lion still at it, dying on the floor. Terrible presence, I cried. Eat me or die. It got up that afternoon, walked to the door with its paw on the wall to steady its trembling body, let out a soul-rending creak from the bottomless roof of his mouth, thundering from my floor to heaven heavier than a volcano at night in Mexico, pushed the door open and said in a gravelly voice, "Not this time, baby, but I will be back again." Lion that eats my mind now for a decade, knowing only your hunger, not the bliss of your satisfaction. Oh, roar of the universe, how am I chosen? In this life I have heard your promise. I am ready to die. I have served your starved and ancient presence. Oh, Lord, I wait in my room at your mercy.
Thank you. on an open fire. Jack Frost hit me, as you know. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe will help to make the season brand. With their eyes all aglow, will find it hard to sleep tonight. There's no sign to on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. Every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeers really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple faith. Many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
One of them told the other, said, look, if you want to get a woman that will be true and honest to you, all you have to do is marry a woman with brown eyes. This guy said, I've been married 2 years. I don't even know what color my wife's eyes are. So he went home and he tiptoed up the steps and sneaked in the bedroom, took his fingers and opened her eyeball up. He looked in there and said, my God, brown! And some guy crawled out from under the bed and said, how you know I was here?
You say then you got a job.
Yeah.
And you studied?
In Jefferson, yeah.
In Jefferson?
I got a job in this place where, you know, but prior to that, this is when they were laughing at me. I knew how to play, I figured, I learned the scale, and I learned how to play two tunes in a certain key, in the key of D, where you sack the left concert.
Yeah.
I learned how to play the first 8 bars of Lazy River, and I knew the complete tune of Honeysuckle Rose. I didn't ever stop to think about it. It was on the keys or nothing like that. So I took my horn out to this joint where guys, a bunch of fellas who I had seen around were. And the first thing they started playing was Body and Soul, Long Beat, you know, like this. So I go to playing my Honeysuckle Rose. And don't, I mean, ain't no form of commemoration, you know, so. They laughed me off the band. They laughed at me so hard.
How old were you then?
That was long ago at the same time, 16, 17.
Before the accident?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
About a year before that. Well,
where did you get your sack then?
Well, my mother bought me a horn for, years before that, but I wasn't interested. I wasn't ready for it then. I didn't get interested in a horn until I got interested in a baritone horn when I was in high school. But I'd had the saxophone for a few years.
Where'd you go to high school, Charlie?
I said it was Lincoln.
In Kansas City?
Yeah.
Huh. Did you play in the high school marching band?
Mm-hmm.
Did they have a symphony band in the high school?
They had a, what they call a symphony band, yeah.
Did you play in that, too?
Yeah.
And baritone and
baritone and baritone and that's right.
And you'd learn Honeysuckle Rose, and you'd learn the first eight bars. Which tune was it?
The Lazy River.
Lazy River. And you were just innocent enough so when you walk in.
I never thought about playing the more keys, you know.
And you played it all in what key was it?
B for saxophone.
And G for the fence. Oh, what a story.
What a slaughter of the innocent.
They murdered it, too. Well, oh, boy.
Well, who did you play with? I mean, what band did you walk in on with that?
Well, it was a band working in the joint. It was a bunch of young fellas that had a band around Kansas City. It was Jimmy Keith's band then. So Keith and the piano player, Robert Wilson, and James Ross, and Shipley Gavan is the fellow's name. He was working at this club in Kansas City.
Well, so after that, you decided, I'm going home and work it out?
Yeah, I knew I had to figure it out. I knew then it must be figured out some kind of way.
And then you went back. It was only, what, 2-3 months then that you worked?
Yeah, I was away about 2-3 months.
And then where did you go when you say you're away? Were you outside of Kansas City?
Yeah, well, that's where I was on this job. I was down there. The name of the town was Eldon, Missouri. It's about
Eldon, E-L-D-O-N?
Yeah, it's about 35 miles from Jefferson City.
I see. And did you play a job there, or was it a...
Yeah, it was a job. So it's a resort, a summer resort. That's during the summer months, from about June to August, something like that.
And that was where you had the chance to study while you were playing.
Yeah.
Bert bought a tenor horn.
Yeah, he got an afro.
How old is he now?
14.
14?
Yeah.
Does he play with it now?
He didn't have one before I bought him that one, you know. He made him bring him to the dance and sang before he sat around and listened to me. It shows a lot of fun having a son that old, you know.
Yeah,
a child. Everyone knew I used
to. Only 12 years old. It's a lot of fun. She plays the C melody when I'm not looking. They never had any C melody back then, did they? When you were
they were more popular then than now.
Sure, were they?
Sure, 32, 33. Those Dallas Bartle was just getting popular then. That's what he was.
Remember Frankie
Trumbull
was playing C melody.
Barney, the barracks boy, is just beginning to get interested in clarinet now. After all this time, he's been wanting to play the clarinet.
How old is Barney?
I guess he's about 22 or so. He was in the Navy for 3 years or so.
Are you going to
be in school? Sure, right away. Why do you go to school right together? We're taking the classes when we go to school together. You're academy to music again.
Charlie, what do you remember of your father? Was he around when you were growing up?
Some of the time. He died when I was I was married and the baby was born.
What sort of work was he?
He was like in his active years, he was a waiter on this train. Kansas City, Chicago, back, Florida, back, Texas. He sure was a well-tutored guy. He spoke 2-3 languages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he play any instrument?
No. He was a dancer in his real young years.
Really?
Yeah. On the circus, on the circus on the TOV, the Ringling Brothers.
No, okay.
I'm
over
the island, we have TOV.
Yeah, with the circus, yeah.
You remember that old circus, do you?
TOV?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Years ago I heard about that during the old Keith Harpin circuit days. Dying out then.
And he met your mother in Kansas City?
Yeah, they met in Kansas City.
And how's your mother now? She's still alive, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very much alive.
Is she?
Fine, yeah.
She got a lot of energy.
She just graduated from nursing school a couple of months ago.
No.
Yeah. I got the stuff at home, the invitation. Oh, I said I'll watch.
How old did you say?
62.
62 years old.
Wonderful.
And graduated from nursing school.
Hey, that's
wonderful. And she's active as can be, man. She don't look at active at all, you know?
Well.
I mean, she's smiling at me, you know. She's very seldom ill, you know? She lives in that good climate and country. She takes good care of herself. She owns her own home.
She's
Well, your mother's a very, very energetic, lively person, huh? Think, knowing that's where you got your spirit and... Funny, you know?
I guess so.
Your dad was a dancer. See, that has the rhythm, so... That could explain part of that, you know?
Have an absolutely extraordinary attitude in our culture and in various other cultures, high civilizations, to the new member of human society. Instead of saying frankly to children, "How do you do? Welcome to the human race. We are playing a game, and we are playing by the following rules. We want to tell you what the rules are so that you'll know your way around, and when you've understood what rules we're playing by, when you get older, you may be able to invent better ones." But instead of that, we still retain an attitude to the child that he is on probation. He's not really a human being. He's a candidate for humanity. And therefore, to preserve the role of parent or to preserve the role of teacher, you have to do what they do in the Arthur Murray School of Dancing, which is that they string you out. They don't tell you all the story about dancing, because if they tell you, you'll learn in a few weeks and go away and you'll know it. But instead, they want to keep you on. And in just this way, we have a whole system of preparation of the child for life, which always is preparation and never actually gets there. In other words, we have a system of schooling which starts with grades, and we get this little creature into the thing with a kind of "come on, kitty, kitty, kitty," and we get it always preparing for something that's going to happen. They don't encourage quite that. They want you after graduate school, or after graduation, commencement as it's called, beginning to get out into the world with a capital W. And so you know, you've been trained for this and now you've arrived. But when you get out into the world at your first sales meeting, they've got the same thing going again, because they want you to make that quota. And if you do make it, they give you a higher quota. And come along about 45 years of age, maybe you're vice president. And you suddenly dawns on you that you've arrived, with a certain sense of having been cheated, because it's just the same as things. Life feels the same as it always felt, and you are conditioned to be in desperate need of the future. So the final goal that this culture prepares for us is called retirement, when you will be a senior citizen, and you will have the wealth and the leisure to do what you've always wanted, but you will at the same time have impotence, a rotten prostate, and false teeth, and no energy.
I took the other route. Maybe you could say I was what, more cowardly in one sense, or less moral. I preferred to go out and beg, and I did that too. I went out on the streets in Brooklyn, near where I lived, at night, and would ask a guy for a dime. Give me a dime, do you see? Help me out.
I'm up against it.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you find about people when you did?
But, by the way, I found that that was just as hard work as taking a job. Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. Well, you see, I hadn't yet come to that point where I had made my resolution to live this other life, do you see? There are a lot of things happened, Ben, at that time.
Sure, sure.
First place, I fell in love with another woman, was caught red-handed, was divorced, do you see? And I lived with her. And then, while living with her, I quit my job. I one day walked into the Western Union. There was the great moment, and it was through my wife, that new wife, that I got the courage to make my final decision and to live by it. She really buoyed me up and helped me. She knew that I was a writer and wanted me to be one, do you see? And she pushed me into it, you might say. So one day I went to the office. I took all my private things out and put them in a briefcase. I said, I don't want my salary that's due me. I left a note. I said, hand this to the manager. I'm quitting right now. The office was full of help, boys waiting to be hired, you know. There were always 50 or 60 milling around. It was a pandemonium. It was at 23rd Street, the Flatiron Bell. I'll never forget it. But I walked out that day, and I felt I am a free man. And I deliberately walked up Broadway. It was about 10 in the morning. To watch all the other people with their briefcases under their arm going in, soliciting, selling, you know, buying and selling and praying and hoping and begging. And I said, never, not for me. I'll never do this. Now I'm going to be a writer and I'll live or die by it, you know. And then began the 10-year period when I really did suffer and starve, do you see, until my...
Gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah. Woo! Now, when I was a young boy, at the age of 5, this pain of life. But now I'm a man, way past 21. You got to believe me, woman. I have lots of fun. I'm a man. I spell him A-N. That rather than me. No B.
No B.
Oh, child. Why?
Yeah.
That mean manish boy.
What it mean?
I'm a man.
Yeah.
I'm a natural lover's man. I'm a man. I'm a rolling stone. I'm a man.
Yeah.
I'm a hoochie coochie man.
Oh
yeah. Just me, my mate. You know I made the moon, honey. Come up 2 hours late. Wasn't that a man?
Yeah.
I spelled him
Watch out now,
I'm a rolling stone. I'm a hoochie coochie man. Johnny, I'm a man. I'm a man, Johnny. Johnny, I'm a man. I'm a man, Johnny.
Oh, you right?
Yeah, I'm a man, Johnny.
Looked at the first woman, she was there with her kids. She said, madam, the conscious thoughts are always of food. That's why you made your kids candy. The lady said, oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to know this, doctor. He looked at the second woman and said, now, madam, you're obsessed with the thought of money. Money takes over control of you. That's why you made your kids candy. The other lady grabbed her son by the arm and said, that's ridiculous. Let's get out of here, Peter.
Noche con Francis.
Una noche con Francis.
Una, no.
Una, sí, femenino.
No,
yeah. Feminine,
yeah,
I'm sure.
It's no feminine. No feminine.
I'm sure, but. I'm
it's
sure
not
she's
feminine.
Sure.
It's masculine.
No, it's feminine, not
it's
sure.
Masculine.
I'm sure.
El Noche.
I've been living in Spain for a long time.
What
know?
Do you say?
It's masculine.
El Noche.
Una, una noche.
El Noche.
La Noche. La Noche.
You're feminine, that's why.
Are you a rat guy?
Thank you.
Some length in the Tropic of Cancer. I lived from street to street, hotel to hotel, one studio to another, from day to day, in other words. I had no carte d'identité for over a year. I had no address, no regular address. I got up in the morning, always without any money in my pocket, walked down to Boulevard Montparnasse, Café Dôme, the Select, the Rotonde, looking, as I always say, for a friendly face. And I got almost to be like a criminal, like a pickpocket or something, could read faces. Is he my ticket, my meal ticket? Is he the guy who will help me, do you see? I could size them up pretty well. Usually they were American or English, now and then Russian, never a Frenchman.
Why do you feel that kind of hunted, perilous, and fear-ridden life is preferable to the salesman with the briefcase gawking, walking up Broadway?
Well, perhaps the only answer I can say is, it's your own life. It's your own misery. It's your own misfortune. The other way, one doesn't feel himself in whatever he does, do you see? This way, you're all of a piece. Whatever happens, whether it's good or bad, you are taking it. And not some double, not some robo, not some divided self, do you see? A man who's selling, he's almost a man with a split personality, you know. One side of him is a husband, a father, a protector of a family, and the other side is a man who's a slave, who knuckles down and says yes to his boss, and does all manner of things that he doesn't believe in. Isn't that so? But when you're absolutely stripped, and you're begging for help, you're yourself and nothing but you. You're naked, you're exposed and vulnerable, do you see? Huh? You feel that you're carrying your own self all the time, as it were. Do you know? I don't know if I can make it any more clear to you than that.
That does it. That says it.
Yeah, it's a...
How about the...
It's true that they are two kinds of servitude, you know. You can't get away from it. They're both vicious, they're both terrible and ugly, but you have still a sense of freedom. A freedom, that the freedom to starve and to suffer and so on, do you know?
Well, let me ask you then, if these are two kinds of servitude, Henry, is that what life is then? One servitude or another? Is that the lesson of life?
Well, I suppose, Ben, that's a pretty big question. Yes, in a way, what you're asking me, I suppose there's a profound truth there, that's what life is servitude. But let's put it this way. I think I can make it a little more clear. One is voluntary servitude. There can be a voluntary and there's an involuntary. Now, a voluntary servitude takes in the really great figures. Now, I don't mean to include myself when I say that. I'm speaking of bigger figures. I mean like a Saint Francis, do you see? There's a man who voluntarily threw away his riches, stripped himself naked in court, threw his clothes to the on the floor and said, they belong to my father, they're not mine. Do you remember? He gets up, he goes out, and he becomes the monk. He puts on the hair shirt and so on. He takes the begging bowl, and he elects to dedicate himself to a life of service to humanity and undergoes all manner of humiliation and sacrifice. Henry, I'm thinking about...
Thank you.